Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Casey Alexander, Lipscomb basketball coach in studio. Casey, what's up? How are you, man?
I'm great. How are y'all?
We are good. Man, what an unbelievable team you had this year. How much fun were those guys to coach, especially with the senior-laden group?
It was a lot of fun. Hard to put into words, you know, even now with some reflection. It's bittersweet that it was over, but yeah. A super group, a great season, a lot of great things that happened. A typical season that it was up and down at times, but I wouldn't give any of it back.
Garrison Matthews, we talked with you before about the recruiting process with him, and you said that you felt like you got him because he didn't necessarily know how good he might could be. but to watch the evolution of his game.
He was developed by the coaching staff at Lipscomb.
From Franklin High School and now to, in some of these NBA mock drafts, a first-round draft pick coming out of Lipscomb. I mean, think about that.
That's it's impressive, and he definitely deserves the credit. I'd like to take the credit for it, but that guy from day one until today has worked really hard, has continued to develop and wants to get better, and that's a great formula for anybody in any occupation to do well.
That first night in the Garden when he went for, was it
34,
and hits the handoff, you know, step back three there. That's quite an introduction to maybe the world that didn't know him to go, oh my gosh, who's this guy in New York just crushing it in the Garden right now?
Right, and you couple that with the NC State game where he had 44. So right. Those two games, he has 78, you know, in the quarterfinals against NC State and semis against Wichita State. But in both of those games, really from start to finish, impressive. You know, he didn't have a segment of the game where he was over or where he was trying to do too much like he perhaps was doing in the Texas game in the championship, but phenomenal run for him, phenomenal season. He's going to go down in history as currently our greatest of all time.
So talk about that real quick, Madison Square Garden. We talked to you before you went, and you said that you had taken the team there a couple of years ago, which is interesting. But the first time you walk out for the shoot-around, kids' eyes big? Like, how did you have to kind of diminish the actual situation?
Yeah, we had difficulty getting them to put their phones away. You know, they're taking pictures of each other and videoing, and it was a pretty special moment for all of them. And literally, I worried about getting our shoot-around work accomplished because they were so distracted. But they bowed it in. We were okay.
Gene Hackman didn't have to deal with that in Hoosier, right? No cell phones back then.
That's right, yeah.
Did you have somebody measure the goals just to make sure?
It felt the same, honestly. But it was great. I mean, that's a spectacular venue, and it was great to have a couple of nights there.
What kind of moment do you have with the – maybe each one of those seniors, and I'm not asking you to say what you said to them, but for guys who took the school that far, first postseason win in Division I basketball, NCAA tournament berth, and then the next year you literally played as long as you could possibly play. They played as many games as they could play, making it as far as they did. What in the world do you say to kids like that?
Yeah, it's you just tell them the truth, you know, and you tell them how grateful you are for what they've done, and you acknowledge all of the great things that they've done. You use it in the future, and you reflect back upon it as all the great things that they did. And you know, and it would be different if they were just good players, but they were guys that our staff love spending time with. They were guys that we could take anywhere and do anything with, and so that makes it a really remarkable group.
What's the farthest away that you heard from somebody during this run?
Whew, I don't know if I could answer that. I heard from a lot of people. I'm still hearing from them, which for me personally is probably my greatest joy. I mean, I love what the team did. That kind of speaks for itself, and that's, you know, that's what it's all about, you know, for us. But at the same time, the hat that I wear, which is to, you know, be good for Lipscomb. When you hear from people who haven't had much to do with Lipscomb in a long time, and they come from far and wide, and you get texts that say, you know, I'm back, and that sort of thing. That's kind of, you know, the president would say that's the main thing I was hired to do. So it's nice to deliver on that to some degree.
So after your semifinal win, what was your, when you got to your phone? I mean, I'm talking like 1,000 yeah. texts here.
I don't know. I don't have nearly that many friends. So I had plenty. And, you know, as you know, so you start replying and then they send you another one. Oh, that's great. Because when right. do you play again?
Yep.
So,
like, I don't need a conversation.
I can't do this all
I already long. Responded once. That's all I got. I got a scouting report
yeah,
to do.
But it was great. It was, you know, that stuff I like. I don't want that, like as in pat on the back, but I like the interaction, you know, yeah. That's kind of my personality. So it's fine. It doesn't wear me down.
Casey Alexander in studio with us. What did you think about the Final Four games? Just as a basketball coach, you're removed from your season, so you can just watch basketball.
Well, hold on. Can we ask it this way? Do you think Auburn got screwed?
No, I think they got what they rightly deserved.
Oh, man. Boom. Wow. Hashtag you know, take that,
man. Right, Dawn so, Eagle.
So I'd be lying if I said I had my feet propped up and I watched 80 minutes of Final Four basketball, but I saw enough of them to know that they were both incredible games. And, you know, I think all of us want, whether fan, coach, whatever, we want that Super Bowl experience. It's like, just give me a good game.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really matter what the names are. It doesn't matter where it is. I just want something that's good to watch. And maybe some of us like more entertaining, like you think about tonight's game and you might think I want something more entertaining, but they were two great games. Obviously both played down to the wire and four good teams.
You know, when Auburn was down 10 late to Virginia, I was thinking, you know, that's like 20 to most teams because of the way that Virginia plays defense and can execute their offense late in the clock. But they make that comeback. And then I don't know how you guys do it as head basketball coaches, because you control what you can control, guys. But when there's a blatant double dribble call in the yeah. middle of the floor, and if you gain possession there, you likely win, and it's not called, I told Tracy Wilson earlier, I think if I were Bruce Pearl, I would have removed my own head from my shoulders and thrown it at the officials.
I said last night in a different interview that, and I got blasted for it, because it was blatant when you go back and watch it, but it's such an unusual thing. You know, I mean, when's the last time you saw somebody dribble one off their foot and recapture it and dribble it again? I mean, I can't remember ever seeing it. And so, you know, when you're...
Because most players don't dribble again.
Yeah. When you're an official, you know, and it happens that fast, you got to make sure you get it right. And you can't blow your whistle unless you know you saw what you saw. Some of them will, because they think they saw what they saw, but you can't. You know, a good official is not going to call it unless he's sure that he saw it. You know, like the foul. He's sure that he saw the foul, and that was definitely a foul.
Casey Alexander, our guest. Should there be some kind of safety net at the end of games? Should there be, like, in the last minute, should some dude watching in New York who's the chief of all officials in a game like that, or no, should there be human error just happens and that's part of the deal?
You know, the struggle, you can certainly argue both sides of it. You know, we all want it to be done right, you know, and we're all going to complain about how long it takes to get it done right. It's a tough balance there, and I like the way that it is. I mean, I think you need to have some correctable errors. I don't know if you just need to open the whole rule book up and say, you know, hey, you know, anything, that was a foul, so let's go back and award a foul. Hey, that was a double dribble, so let's go back and, you know, we'll put 38 back on the clock now or whatever it is. And I just think that's a little bit too much. I think you get the main things and you make sure that there's nothing that's really correctable. But the judgment calls are really tough in every sport. And you start talking about, you know, correcting judgment calls consistently, then you're asking maybe for even more problems.
And you can get us on Twitter at @RHL1045. Randolph Terry writes, I want this guy to take Barnes' job when he goes to UCLA.
Oh, man. People just go ahead and let go now on Coach Barnes.
There you go, Coach.
Embracing the new.
Randolph is my agent, if you didn't know. I told him to wait a minute.
Well, we do need to ask you. We asked you the other day, and we appreciate the thoughtful and honest and candid yeah. response about Belmont, because, as you said, that school means so much to you. You spent 20 years there. Where is that situation?
I would just say ongoing. They've got an opening, and there's a lot of reasons for them to consider me, and there's probably some reasons for me to consider them. And so it's quite natural that people would talk about it. You know, I owe them the courtesy to discuss it probably, but where it'll end up going, I don't know. I, you know, obviously I love where I am. That's what all coaches would say. But in my case, I really mean it. I can coach at Lipscomb for a long time and be really happy.
Hutch is the best. Can he still shoot?
He shoots everywhere we go. Yeah, he finds a way to get some shots up. But he is the best. I mean, he's a phenomenal leader that's treated me incredibly well.
Philip Hutcherson, for those that don't know.
Yeah, the current AD. I have a question, not specific to your situation or the Belmont job, but just in general, because we've talked so much about Rick Barnes and so many people are surprised that he would even consider a UCLA job. But as a coach, is it different priorities for different coaches when you start to think about this? And I know you thought about this when you were still an assistant looking to jump into a head coaching job, but just the thought process of everything that you have to go through as a coach whenever you're considering a move or a possible move or a possible stay for a long time, what's it like?
I think the more you do it, the more you realize that the fit is the most important part of the whole thing. And the fit is, you know, we all think differently about that. It might be region for some people or level for some people or public or private or big or small or league or you name it. But then it also, you know, it's, you know, what does the administration want? Do their values align with what you want? Do they?
That's important.
It's incredibly important. You know, what's the AD like? What kind of leadership do they have? What is it? What kind of support do they have? What are the resources like? So there are a ton of things to consider, and we would all, you know, put those in a different ranking maybe if we were trying to prioritize. You know, my list and your list would look a little bit different. But in the end, it would all come down to, you know, what feels best for Don, what feels best for Casey. And that's, you know, that's generally going to determine your happiness level.
What was the process like for you? Because you'd been in, you played at Belmont, then assistant 16 years, and you go to Stetson. What was it that you finally said, okay, I got to fly away from the nest now, or did Coach Bird go, hey, man, you got to go. You got to go, TV.
You got to spread my coaching tree here.
I know the Stetson AD. He is on the line. Here's your job.
Coach was definitely way more ready for me to go than I was ready to go myself. He
was
like great.
A parent-child.
Yeah, I was like, come on, man, get out of here and fly the coop here. Anyway, I needed that opportunity. A couple of things. One, I thought Coach was going to coach for a long time, and I knew that I wanted to be a head coach, and I wasn't willing to go just anywhere, but it was a Division I opportunity at a place that was similar to where I was, so I thought it would be a good fit, and it was. In a lot of ways, it was exactly what I needed at the time. I'd sign up and do it all over again. But I took the Lipscomb job because it was a better fit for a lot of different reasons, and that's generally, you know, that's just kind of what you learn as you go through the process.
Speaking of Coach Burr, we had a couple of players on the other day when he retired and announced his retirement, and then we had him on later, so I got to kind of regurgitate some of what they said to him. And J.J. Mann joined us, and he was in Portugal. And every time he called at Coach Bird by his – he called him Birdman. Every time he said, so
I've never called him Birdman.
So I said to Coach Bird, I said, yeah, JJ Mann said Birdman did, you know, this. And Rick said, well, the first thing is I've never had a player call me Birdman. Well, he's in Portugal, so maybe he feels like he's far enough away, but
distance.
I just thought that was funny. But both of those players, Craig Bradshaw and JJ Mann, talked about his competitiveness, and I've heard that about you too. What did you learn most from him, do you think?
Oh, gosh. The full gamut. I learned, how to run a program without compromising and to try to do it, try to know what your plan is on the front end and feel convicted about why you're doing it that way, and then just stick to your guns no matter, you know, really how it's going for you, believing that that's the right way. It doesn't mean it's the only way, but that's the way that we do it. That's what I learned from him. Obviously, he's a brilliant X's and O's coach. You know, his strategy in game is second to none, and so I think I've picked up a lot of that. I think that's probably one of my strengths as a coach as well. And then, you know, I think the competitive part, I think we're just similar people. We were both, you know, pretty moderately successful players, you know, that only had one chance to contribute to a team, and that's by being leaders and being a coach on the floor and being thinkers and being tough and getting the most out of ourselves and being able to maybe elevate the players around us. That's probably the thing that's the most similar, even though I never saw him play. I've played enough golf and ping pong and tennis and everything else.
See, we heard about the ping pong, diving and stuff.
He's a maniac for sure. So.
When you got to Belmont, did you already know, I'm going to be a coach when I'm done here? Or how did that?
Very much so. When I graduated from Brentwood Academy and I played three sports and again I, on good teams and I could have gone. I didn't go to Belmont originally. I went to the University of Tennessee. And because I was a Tennessee fan and I was willing to give it up, but I left after a semester because I knew.
Here's where your Twitter feed just gets hammered.
Now what was it?
I grew up a Tennessee fan. That's all they needed.
Oh boy. I went to Tennessee.
I thought that's why we were here.
I played there briefly.
No, I gave it up. But I came back to Belmont not because I wanted to play, it's because I knew I wanted to coach. And the playing part just kind of, you know, I was just lucky to be on some great teams during that time. And, you know, I had no idea that, that Coach Bird would become what he has become. I had no idea that that I would work for him for 16 years and I'd still be coaching 25 years later and so forth. And so it's just kind of amazing how all that works out.
What do you think about this matchup tonight? I mean, does a defensive matchup intrigue you as a coach?
Like the over under is 118.
I don't know anything about that.
I don't think you'll.
Yeah, sorry.
I've got brothers.
There you go.
I don't think you'll find any coach that's not intrigued by this matchup. You know, again, we were talking off air. I think you, it's fair to say I'd like to watch a game that's more entertaining and more up and down and tempos higher. And you know, that's just personal preference. But I'm excited about watching two great teams that are unbelievably good at what they try to be unbelievably good at, and that is playing well on the defensive end of the floor. I mean, we've got the number three, maybe the number one and the number five defensive teams in the country, and they're, but they do it very differently. That's one thing that I will watch as a coach is, you know, Virginia, pack line defense, real simple. They don't try to take things away. They just don't give anything up. Texas Tech forces the issue a little bit. You know, they create turnovers. They block a lot of shots. They force you into kind of quick early decisions. And so very different styles, even though they're both incredibly good.
That being said, though, about Texas Tech, yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah. But they don't have a lot of defensive breakdowns either, right? So
yeah, they're not reckless with how they're doing. And they're not trying to create tempo at all, you know, and their strengths are both the same. They're just tough and they play very well together. You can't be a good defensive team if you're not synchronized. You know, if your guys don't know what they're supposed to do, if they're not willing to do it, if they're not, you know, want to do the dirty work, understand that it's a team event on that end of the floor. I mean, you cannot be good unless that's the case. And both of these teams are exceptional at that. They play very hard and very, you know, very much for one another.
Do you have a favorite team? Like looking back, like to me, that UNLV team, the one that won the national championship, and then they all come back. I don't know how, like Larry Johnson and
About like that he's coached.
No.
Okay, like, I was gonna say he's not gonna pick favorites.
I thought you wanted me to say Tennessee.
Yeah, maybe the Tony White Tennessee team. But like those UNLV teams that ran up and down the floor, and then Loyola Marymount.
They were not my favorite.
Bo Kimble and all those.
They were remarkable to watch. Yeah. You know, I'm pretty cyclical, really. I mean, there were a time where I loved watching Duke play.
Yeah.
And I didn't like Carolina. Now I would probably prefer Carolina over Duke. I don't know why that is.
He's coming at me. He's like, that was a foul. Auburn didn't get screwed.
You know, the last 20 years, I just want to watch good teams. And more than that, as a coach, you know, it's more who my friends are and the people I have connections with and a reason to be supportive of that team.
But as you watch games, do you watch it with a coach's eye because you're looking for different things that you can do, maybe do it differently than you thought of
before? I'm not watching with a pen and paper, you know, where I'm trying to steal ideas necessarily. Yeah. But, I mean, I love to watch college basketball. I'll watch any college basketball game any night from my hotel room or whatever it could be. You know, it could be Colgate and Lafayette, and that's fine with me. I'm going to watch it, and I'm going to enjoy it. I pay attention to style and, you know, and special situations and things like that.
I saw where Chris Beard is a huge Nick Saban fan. Are there coaches outside of basketball that you kind of look to for inspiration?
I can't put a finger on anybody specifically. I love Tony Bennett and everything that he's about.
He's phenomenal.
You know, and, I don't want to coach that style. I mean, my goodness, we couldn't beat it because we played Liberty, you know, three times this year and that's that style. And I didn't like it at all. But that's a guy who, you know, we were talking about Coach Bird earlier. That's a guy who knows what he wants. That guy is relentless in pursuing, you know, his vision of what his program should look like. And the results are phenomenal. When you think about Virginia and you think about what they've done the last three or four years, not, you know, take out the UMBC thing and you look at regular season championships, tournament championships, championship game tonight. when you're playing in the same league as Duke and Carolina, and you pretty much one up them every year.
Right. Tracy Wilson joined us earlier, and she said that she was talking to Tony Bennett about that UMBC game, only one seed to lose to a 16. He said, for us to be in the national championship game the very next year, what a painful gift that was.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm sure it makes it much more rewarding for them now. Each season is different. That's one thing a coach is always going to say, but there's no doubt they were forced to carry that around with them everywhere they went this year. So hats off to them for fighting through it.
Steven on Twitter, if Rick Barnes leaves Vol Hoops, he included Vol_Hoops in this. They need to take a serious look at Casey Alexander at Lipscomb. Great coaching mind. So whatever you decide, Lipscomb, Belmont, Tennessee, just let us know.
Well, Twitter is good with you. How's that?
Yeah, we'll
that's a win, man.
Joey, if Barnes leaves, give me Casey. I mean, you've gone
on, man.
You've done well here with Vol Nation. So, hey, it's good to see you, man. Thank you for coming in, and we always appreciate your insight.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
And thanks for a fun ride this year. It was fun to follow you guys.
Well, you guys were great to us, and that's not lost it for us either.
Casey Alexander, Lipscomb basketball coach. All right.